The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Drug addiction continues to be a problem in this country and other parts of the world. The amazing fact is that you may not know that you're living with an addiction problem and that the drugs in question may be in your own home. This is Afflicted by Addiction with your host, Bradley DeHaven. Brad has been on the front lines of addiction and will share the wisdom he's discovered along with guest experts and those who have lived through it or are living through it right now. Here's your host, Bradley DeHaven.
Welcome to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven. I'm the author of two books, Defining Moments, A Suburban Father's Journey into His Son's Oxy Addiction. That book chronicles my voyage as I went undercover for my son to get him out of a prison stint for what I believe is a disease called addiction. I tell the whole book from a very odd perspective as I'm sitting in a parking lot wired and undercover, and all those thoughts that go through a dad's head when you're thinking, what brought me here? And those were my defining moments. I'm also the author of The Addict Among Us. The foreword is written by Congresswoman Mary Bono Mack. She's going to be our guest today. She's now former Congresswoman Mary Bono Mack. She served as Congresswoman from 1998 to 2013 and now works tirelessly in the private sector and is still a champion of the cause. The Addict Among Us, I interviewed over 400 families to find commonalities, things that were similar that these addicts did. I interviewed the addicts themselves, and it was other people's story. I told other people's story about how addiction threw them off of their respective cliff. So I interviewed a teenage prostitute who told me her horrific story. I went behind the walls of Folsom State Prison, interviewed a young man who turned to robbery to feed his addiction and had been in there since he was 18. He was 27, ironically the same age as my son at the time of the interview, and it was very difficult for me to sit there with him in the yard behind the wall of Folsom State Prison and interview him while I kept looking at him thinking this could have been and perhaps should have been my own son. So the book was a real tough book to write, and there were some really difficult moments, and I shed a few tears while I wrote this book, and I hope that you'll find it helpful. Its long title is How to Prevent, Detect, Treat, and Live With the Addict Among Us. Mary Bono Mack honored me by writing the foreword to my book and will be joined here in a moment by her. And she wrote a beautiful foreword for me. She originally contacted me after she'd read Defining Moments, my first book. And we had met in San Diego at a meeting that we'll talk about, actually in Orange County at a meeting that we'll talk about during the interview. During that time, she read my book and decided to contact me. She really wanted to get involved and co-write a book with me, but I was almost done with The Addict Among Us. And when she read the draft, she said that she'd be honored to write the foreword. Some of the things that she said in the foreword were just profound, you know, that we as Americans rally around in efforts to fight everything from breast cancer and childhood diseases and other serious health threats, which we should. But the fact is that for far too long that addiction has been this stigma, and we look away and we think, why don't they stop? Why don't they quit? And we're losing hundreds of thousands of people. And the Center for Disease Control estimates about 100 people a day are dying from a prescription drug overdose. A day. That's four times the amount of people that died at Sandy Hook Elementary School in a horrific event that took the innocent lives of children. But these are also somebody's children. So I hope that that you'll read my second book. And one of the other things that she said was that it's time to move this story from the obituary page to the front page. And I couldn't agree more. It's true. And it's not only that the people are dying, it's people emergency rooms visits. 3,000 a day were estimated in 2008 just from prescription drugs. So the cost on our community is huge. And we hope that people will get outraged and see that this is a problem. The number of babies being born addicted in some areas estimate one per hour addicted to a class of drugs that prescription pain killers start, opioids. Some people call them opiates. And it's difficult when you think that in 08, they estimated that one out of four high school students have used prescription painkillers. This is something that Mary touched on in her foreword as well. And she also stated that this is a national tragedy. And it is a national tragedy. And we need everybody to understand that this is not going away without your help. And people are going to find themselves afflicted by addiction. And that's just a hard fact. The FDA continues to drag its feet to defy us as people. The FDA would go out of its way. If there's one bag of bad spinach, they'd pull spinach off the shelves all over the United States. But people are dying of prescription drug overdoses that they rubber stamp and approve, and they're dying in masses. I'm not saying that the prescription drugs should be taken off the market. People need prescription drugs at some level. But monitoring them, making sure that they're getting to the right people, making sure that they're tamper-resistant, who could argue with that? If you're going to swallow a pill for an intended purpose of pain, making sure that that pill cannot be crushed, snorted, smoked, or injected is just simple, simple solution. It made a huge difference when they reformulated Oxycontin and Opana, two of the most deadly drugs in the world that are still killing people, even in pill form, but killing less people than they were when they were just basically ready to crush, snort, smoke. And stopping some of the drugs like Zohydro, made by a company out of San Diego called Zogenix, who introduced a pure 12-hour hydrocodone last year to the FDA, was voted down 11-2 to not approve this drug, but yet the FDA still drags its feet and teases with the fact that they can approve it and they can go past this vote. We as a people deserve more respect than this. We deserve an FDA that's looking out for us. We don't deserve double talk from people that we're paying. Those people at the FDA are taking honorariums, fees, bribes, cash, money, trips from the very drug makers that they're approving their drugs. They're not allowed to be paid by them, but they're allowed to take an honorarium. You tell me if that stinks. I think it does. And as far as the drug companies in this nation, we're one of two countries in the world that allows prescription drugs to be advertised on TV. Do you really need the boob tube telling you what your symptoms are so that you can go to the doctor and get a prescription? You don't. They're advertising this. And the fact is that we didn't find out the truth about big tobacco and the secret memos and the highly addictive nicotine and the evil giant that was addicting and killing people and still is killing people and giving them cancer until they stopped them from advertising. That's when we started to hear the story. So if we as a country don't demand more from our politicians, our bureaucrats, and our government agencies like the FDA to do what they're supposed to do, and that's approve and deny and evaluate drugs, food, whatever they do, but for the sake of this conversation, we're talking about prescription drugs that are killing over 100 people a day of all ages. So it's not just the kids, and we tend to focus on that a lot. The kids do have a problem with, you know, crushing, snorting, smoking these prescription drugs, but a lot of adults are finding themselves taking these drugs, forgetting if they took them, taking them with alcohol, and not waking up in the morning. So parents, brothers, sisters, grandparents are dying of these prescription drugs that are intended to help us. So we need a system in place to help these people, and we need a system in place that makes the FDA accountable. And I am so pleased to bring with me today Congresswoman, former Congresswoman Mary Bono Mack, who is a true champion of the cause. I'm, again, thrilled that she wrote the foreword to my book, The Addict Among Us. But more than that, I'm thrilled at what she does for the citizens of this country tirelessly. And you're going to hear about all the things that she does do. Even though she's no longer a congresswoman, you will see how active and what a great champion she is. And I hope that one day that her voice is booming across the nation. I'm Bradley DeHaven. You're listening to Afflicted by Addiction. You can go to rxdrugaddict.com. Visit my website. We have a newsletter there you can sign up for. You can go to Facebook, Afflicted by Addiction. Like us at Afflicted by Addiction on Facebook. And You know, remember, if you need a speaker for an event, I'm available. I've written two books. I'm Bradley DeHaven. I'm your host on Afflicted by Addiction, and we'll be joined by Mary Bonomack in just a couple of minutes.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Hi, I'm Bradley DeHaven, and I'm the host of Afflicted by Addiction. The best rehab is the one that works for you. And this show has been made possible by the generous contribution of the rehab center that my son went to, Narcanon. I'm blessed that my son is 2.5 years clean of the drugs that once owned him. Narcanon gave him the tools that he needed to walk through a world filled with drugs and not return to the darkness of addiction. Narcanon did not want to run a commercial during this program, but I want to thank them for allowing the voice of those of you who are afflicted by addiction to be heard. Visit my website, rxdrugaddict.com, to get a link to Narcanon, and if you want to learn more, just click on the site. Again, the best rehab is the one that works for you. Most importantly, seek professional help if you are afflicted by addiction.
Prescription drug and heroin use are epidemic in America. Every 19 minutes, someone dies from a drug overdose. Every 24 minutes, someone dies from a prescription drug overdose. Where do these drugs come from? Your own medicine cabinet, the middle school playground, friends, and the biggest problem of all, dirty doctors. Behind the Orange Curtain is a hard-hitting documentary that will open your eyes and your heart to this very real epidemic facing our youth today. Prescription drugs and heroin use. Addiction crosses all socio and economic barriers. It doesn't matter if you live on Park Avenue or the park bench. No one is exempt. It's in your city, your county, your state, and in your backyard. Behind the Orange Curtain is coming to iTunes April 23rd. Check out Behind the Orange Curtain on Facebook and visit our website at www.behindtheorangecurtain.net.
Bradley DeHaven has spoken to thousands of parents and addicts, discovering commonalities and teachable moments that can spare you the consequences of addiction. The signs, symptoms, and solutions of drug addiction is something you can learn now or when you are forced to. Bradley has written two books on drug addiction from the view of a parent. His no BS approach could save your child's life. Brad has been interviewed on Fox, ABC, CBS, The Huffington Post, and other forms of media. Brad and his son appear in the award-winning documentary Behind the Orange Curtain. Brad's available as a keynote speaker for events and corporations. Learning about addiction is important for every family. All the rules have changed, and now the drugs that addict our children are synthetic heroin, prescribed by your doctor and found in your own medicine cabinet. Sign up for Brad's newsletter on rxdrugaddict.com and find links to his two books, Defining Moments and The Addict Among Us. Again, be sure to visit rxdrugaddict.com for more information.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
You are tuned in to Afflicted by Addiction with your host, Bradley DeHaven. If you have a question or comment for Brad about the program, please send an email to brad@rxdrugaddict.com. That's brad@rxdrugaddict.com. Now back to our program, Afflicted by Addiction.
Welcome to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven, and I'm honored to be joined today by former Congresswoman Mary Bonomack. Mary has been a champion of the cause of prescription drug awareness, education, and reform. I'm pleased to work alongside of her, honored that she honored me by writing the foreword to my second book, The Addict Among Us. And without any further ado, I'd like to bring in Mary Bonomack.
Well, hey, Bradley. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Mary, I usually start the show by asking my guests a simple question with a complex answer, and that is, are you afflicted by addiction?
Well, what a great question, and that certainly opens up the conversation, I'm sure, and gets things rolling. I cannot imagine anybody in America any longer saying that they haven't been affected by addiction. I know for me personally, it is something that I've lived with my entire life. I've been surrounded by addicts, and I tend to love addicts, and so it's an issue that I've wrestled with, and even through my congressional career, it was something that was really affecting me and my family, and I realized as a member of Congress that if it was something that was this ferocious and really affecting my family, that it must be affecting everybody in America, and that we need to have a serious conversation and dialogue in America about the new epidemic of drug abuse. In my mind, it really is the prescription drug abuse epidemic that is really hitting America and hitting it very hard right now. So simple answer to you is yes, I've been affected in a huge way.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I know that we talk personally quite a bit, and it's something that when you start to talk about addiction, it was why the title of my second book was so easy, The Addict Among Us. It was like I couldn't throw a rock in a room and not hit somebody that had been affected by addiction, or the term I use, afflicted by addiction. And do you find the same thing when you started to come out and talk about your experience with addiction? Didn't the floodgates open for you?
Oh, absolutely. To be honest about this disease and what's happening to folks, really, I sort of became a magnet for people who would either call me with their stories and a lot of the pain that they've been feeling, and much how, you know, you and I met. So once I started talking about it and opening up and saying first and foremost that I care and that I understand, I think it really was a great opportunity for other people to begin talking to me and begin a great working relationship with so many wonderful people around the country. But, you know, what I loved about the title of your book, among many things, I think in the title and the great graphic that you came up with for your book cover, points out that, yeah, you know, within a very small circle of friends and family, you're going to, you know, meet or know an addict. And what's interesting about it is it's important as we change the conversation in America to recognizing that addiction is not a moral failing. It's a disease. To recognize that we love people who have this disease, and to recognize that there are ways we can help and hurt their disease. And, you know, what I love is that the more we can take the stigma off of this and talk about the causes of it and what we do about it, hopefully the more lives we'll save in the end. So in any event, you're spot on with the title of your book. And again, as long as we start the dialogue and start removing the stigma and get people out there talking about it, I think we're all going to be better off.
And where, Mary, where does this country become outraged? I realize that those that are afflicted by addiction are outraged, but we sit here kind of, you know, crying in our own milk and wondering why isn't the congressional side, why aren't the bureaucrats, why aren't people mounting when you look at the sheer numbers of deaths compared to so many other causes that we rally around?
Well, you know, I'm pleased to say that just this past Friday, there was a hearing in the Congress about the prescription drug epidemic. And, you know, what was interesting is for years in Congress, I fought this issue. And my subcommittee, when I was chairman of the subcommittee, we had hearings on it. But this was the first time the health subcommittee actually brought up the topic and started to look at it. And I think the more pressure for more areas in the Congress on this topic are going to help. But what was interesting and listening to the questions out of the members of Congress to whether it was the, you know, director of ONDCP, Gil Krulikowski, or one of the other witnesses, you could definitely tell that the, you know, the opponents on this debate are really out in force again. And I hate to say it, I think with my voice gone in the Congress, we're losing ground a little bit. It seemed to me that members of Congress were more concerned about making sure people with pain have access to their medications. And they're more concerned about, you know, sort of the pro-pharma side of the debate. But, you know, there really is a sweet spot in public policy. We can do both. We can really make sure that people who are in pain or who are suffering actually have the drugs that they need. And we can also, at the same time, save lives and, you know, prevent people who shouldn't be using these drugs or having access to these drugs and becoming addicted to these drugs. You know, I'm sure that in the supply chain we can do something that would make it a lot harder for people to become addicted. And so the bureaucrats are waking up, but unfortunately so is the other side. you know, the bureaucrats and the politicians are beginning to see this. For me, it's been frustrating on the federal level, the institutes of addiction and NIH and all of these big bureaucracies really don't do a whole bunch of stuff other than study the problem, and they have not come forth or recommended real answers. So a lot of my frustration is towards the FDA and then towards the, you know, federal scientific agencies who actually don't weigh in with a solution. So we have a long way to go.
Well, I think one of the misnomers in all this is that people like me and activists that want change and want reform and want to better educate people and make them more aware about what an epidemic this is and what a slippery slope prescription drugs are, don't want to take the pain medicine away from the people that need them. In my own case, my wife needs them after, ironically, being hit by somebody who was high on her prescription medication. So I understand it, you know, not only from a personal level, but from all the people that I deal with. And I know that the people that I deal with, you know, one father once said to me, and he had buried his son, he said, the people with pain have a pill for their pain, and I don't want to take it away from them, but there's no pill for my pain.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah, you know, you and I have been focused, and so many others have been so focused on this adolescent group. You know, it seems to me that you know, we all know that the, you know, frontal cortex of the brain being developed, up until 25, that when kids have access to these drugs, starting nowadays at 12 years old, on up to 25, that they don't necessarily have the ability to say no or to recognize that these are very harmful. So if we even just started with how do we have a conversation and dialogue about keeping this group of kids off of these drugs, you know, that would be a beginning. And I think that a lot of people have pressed this, have really talked about it. But, you know, Bradley, you and I know way too many people who've lost, you know, kids in this age group because they dabbled in these drugs, they really liked them, and the next thing they knew, they were an addict, and the next thing they knew, they went to sleep. You know, the next thing the parents and the family knows, that these addicts go to sleep and they never wake up again.
Exactly.
And that's what is so hard because, it takes on so many different forms. And then, you know, if you look at some of the other frustrations with the governmental side of this, is that we're not even really doing a correct analysis on the overdose deaths and what people are dying from. Coroners so often just list it as, you know, poisoning, accidental poisoning, or maybe a drug overdose, but they don't really drill down into what's causing it. And it what's shocking, like you said, where's the outrage? When you look at the statistics and you realize how many of these kids that they were losing, you know, in the state of Florida alone a few years ago, 6 kids a day dying.
It's crazy.
And if there were, and this great reporter made the point, you know, if 6 dolphins washed up on the beach dead every day, there would be public outrage. But this is 6 of our kids, and it's still a silent killer.
Right, and you're right, there is the stigma, and there is the crowd that says, why don't they just stop, and they're doing it to themselves. But what they don't realize is that so many of these young kids, and you mentioned their developmental stages, but they get prescribed a drug that is far more powerful than they need for their age, and without their knowledge, they just suddenly start to feel good. And I've interviewed so many addicts that will tell me, I just couldn't believe the feeling afterwards. I suddenly didn't feel the pressure of school. I felt like I fit in. You know, whatever it is, it's that euphoric feeling. And they chase that feeling until it starts chasing them, and they become
right.
Addicted, and they go places that they never planned on going. No kid ever plans on becoming an addict, and you know that. No parent ever sits back and says, hey, I think little Johnny and little Janie are going to grow up to be addicts when they grow up. But it happens to families like ours and families all across the nation, and it happens swiftly. So what do we do to convey that message to those that are out there just thinking, it's your problem behind the picket fence, it's not my problem?
Well, first we start, you get a bunch of brave parents who are willing to talk about the problem, to put their personal pain out there, to raise the issue, and to work very hard. You know, you're an example of this. Some parents do the opposite. They go into, I don't know, withdrawal and sadness, and they don't know how to channel it into activism. But there are a lot of parents who are so terrific about really elevating the cause and the issue and you know, trying to stop other people from experiencing the same pain. So I think it's important that we continue to support one another and to raise our voices and to come together as a group of people. You know, if we band together, there's so much more strength than if all of us tend to have these sort of individualistic and siloed efforts combating the disease. So I thank you for what you've done. You've been a tireless and strong warrior. I know that you've spent your own time and your own money fighting this. And, you know, we need a lot more people like you who are willing to do that, and I think we'll make a difference.
Well, I always say passion doesn't pay well, but it warms my heart. So I'm blessed to do what I do and honored to work alongside the very parents that you talk about. I know when we met at probably, and I've been to some somber meetings, but that was probably the most somber meeting in Orange County that I can recall. I would guesstimate there were about 60 parents there, and my best estimates when I talked to the person that hosted it was that about 50 of them had buried at least one child.
Yes.
And I know that several of them since then have buried children.
Yes. Yes, one very near and dear to my heart who fought the disease valiantly and ended up losing after that meeting. But you know what? There was some positive that came out of that meeting. It was the first time I had heard about the Good Samaritan law. In California, we didn't have one. And this is an important law that, you know, I know you know it, but to explain to any listener,
sure.
That gives the, you know, sort of a immunity to anybody who's going to call in to 911 to report an overdose, somebody who's overdosing. I guess people have been fleeing people as they're overdosing because they're afraid they're going to be prosecuted for being present at a crime scene or present using drugs or possessing drugs. So this was an important law. And if, you know, I worked hard on passing that law in the state of California. I actually picked up the phone and called members of both parties, and I called the governor of California, Jerry Brown, to pledge my support for the bill, to say whatever we had to do if we needed, you know, he is a Democrat and I as a Republican. If he needed cover on the Republican side, he had it, and I was going to do everything I could to pass this bill. It passed, and it was signed into law. And I don't know, you know, I'm not saying that it wouldn't have happened if it weren't for that meeting. I don't know. But I would like to think that it is because of that meeting that this issue was raised. I know that the state legislator who had the bill, was carrying the bill in the state assembly, was getting nowhere over multiple years. This year he got somewhere. This year we got it passed, we got it signed into law, and that came out of that very meeting. So there has been some positive movement and some positive ground, and that comes out of people, again, coming together to try to fight for the greater good, even through their own pain and suffering.
Right, and a good friend of mine, James Kennedy, who I met at that meeting, and I think you know James, who he was on in the movie Behind the Orange Curtain that you and I are both in, he lost his son, and actually the 911 call was captured until the people making the call, who had called from a payphone at a fast food restaurant, realized that the people at 911 knew where they were at, and they hung up and didn't give the final information, and James's son died. James was a guest on my show about 2 months ago, and what a great man, and what a great man to stand up like you described as a parent and help make change so that other parents don't experience the hell of losing a child that he experienced.
Right.
You know, you mentioned early on, and I don't want to ignore this, and we kind of skipped around a little bit, but your voice is gone from the congressional side, but you do still have a voice, and your voice is missed because one of the things, and you alluded to it, is Republican, Democrat, Independent. One of the things I say to people, you know, when I, you know, speak at the Congress or speak at the Capitol in Sacramento, is that I have talked to thousands of people, families, addicts who are afflicted by addiction, and I couldn't tell you if one of them is a Democrat or a Republican, an Independent, or a Communist. I don't know what they are. It doesn't matter to them. When their child or loved one is struggling with addiction, the R or the D or the I behind their name doesn't matter. And so it confuses me when I look at some of these efforts for reform and you do see the party line vote on them. So can you, having had that experience, can you help share with people that are listening why it's so frustrating for us out here that aren't bureaucrats or aren't a congressman or a senator? Why is that you were the one person that kind of swung outside of that and voted with your heart, and that's why your voice is so greatly missed. But why is this a long party lines thing when when it doesn't really matter?
Well, it's interesting because it's not just behind on party lines. There are Democrats as well who don't help with this cause, don't help with this issue. It is bipartisan. There's a bipartisan oblivion that people just don't understand or don't recognize that there's an epidemic until they do. And that, I can tell you, there are more Republicans now waking up to this problem and getting on board and being helpful. It really is a matter of basic awareness. But then the answers to problems, look, I don't want to get into my, you know, view of politics, but I am a pragmatist, and I believe there are answers, and I don't know that they know party line. But then there are different divides on how we believe problems should be solved. I tend to not believe in big government solutions and programs or big government spending. I believe in the power of the individual. So, you know, you're always going to have some of these differences in how you do attack a problem. But what is first and foremost important in the Congress and any other political body is that you have a conversation. And that is people you come together to have that conversation. And that is where constituents and parents and loved ones come in, is they should be demanding a conversation first and foremost. If you get people to talk, regardless of their party affiliation, they can work together in a, you know, pretty good fashion and come up with some solutions that should be acceptable to all. And that is where advocacy really matters. They should be demanding that people are talking, that people join the Prescription Drug Abuse Caucus in the Congress, you know, that they just sort of get armed with the facts. And so they should never, people shouldn't be dismayed by party politics, but they should recognize that they do have a role in this and a voice that's critically important.
So I'd love to hear, you know, we're coming up on a break. I'd love to hear your advice to people out there like me, just people that are out there that have been afflicted or have lost a child or addiction has swept them off of the cliff. What your advice to them, how they can get involved? What are some common steps? Everybody always says call your congressman or write them, but are there some more common steps? And when we come back from the break, I kind of want to address that with you because of your experience and your voice. And I want to thank you, Mary Bono Mack, former congresswoman from, 1998 to 2013, right?
That's right. Yep.
That's a long time. taking care of your constituents, and you've been wonderful, and I'm really so thrilled to have you here on the show. We'll be right back after the break on Afflicted by Addiction.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
Bradley DeHaven has spoken to thousands of parents and addicts, discovering commonalities and teachable moments that can spare you the consequences of addiction. The signs, symptoms, and solutions of drug addiction is something you can learn now, or when you are forced to. Bradley has written two books on drug addiction from the view of a parent. His no BS approach could save your child's life. Brad has been interviewed on Fox, ABC, CBS, The Huffington Post, and other forms of media. Brad and his son appear in the award-winning documentary Behind the Orange Curtain. Brad's available as a keynote speaker for events and corporations. Learning about addiction is important for every family. All the rules have changed, and now the drugs that addict our children are synthetic heroin, prescribed by your doctor and found in your own medicine cabinet. Sign up for Brad's newsletter on rxdrugaddict.com and find links to his two books, Defining Moments and The Addict Among Us. Again, be sure to visit rxdrugaddict.com for more information.
Prescription drug and heroin use are epidemic in America. Every 19 minutes, someone dies from a drug overdose. Every 24 minutes, someone dies from a prescription drug overdose. Where do these drugs come from? Your own medicine cabinet, the middle school playground, friends, and the biggest problem of all, dirty doctors. Behind the Orange Curtain is a hard-hitting documentary that will open your eyes and your heart to this very real epidemic facing our youth today. Prescription drugs and heroin use. Addiction crosses all socio and economic barriers. It doesn't matter if you live on Park Avenue or the park bench. No one is exempt. It's in your city, your county, your state, and in your backyard. Behind the Orange Curtain is coming to iTunes April 23rd. Check out Behind the Orange Curtain on Facebook and visit our website at www.behindtheorangecurtain.net.
Hi, I'm Bradley DeHaven, and I'm the host of Afflicted by Addiction. The best rehab is the one that works for you. And this show has been made possible by the generous contribution of the rehab center that my son went to, Narcanon. I'm blessed that my son is 2.5 years clean of the drugs that once owned him. Narcanon gave him the tools that he needed to walk through a world filled with drugs and not return to the darkness of addiction. Narcanon did not want to run a commercial during this program, but I want to thank them for allowing the voice of those of you who are afflicted by addiction to be heard. Visit my website, rxdrugaddict.com, to get a link to Narcanon, and if you want to learn more, just click on the site. Again, the best rehab is the one that works for you. Most importantly, seek professional help if you are afflicted by addiction.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are tuned in to Afflicted by Addiction with your host, Bradley DeHaven. If you have a question or comment for Brad about the program, please send an email to brad@rxdrugaddict.com. That's brad@rxdrugaddict.com. Now back to our program, Afflicted by Addiction.
Welcome back to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven. You can reach me via my website, rxdrugaddict.com. You can sign up for our newsletter, and you can like us on Facebook at Afflicted by Addiction. I'm joined today by former Congresswoman Mary Bono Mack, who has been a true champion of the cause of reform for prescription drug abuse awareness and education. She has led the charge. We miss her voice in Congress, but we know her voice is still out there. Welcome back, Mary.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here still.
Well, so, Mary, before the break, I kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, perhaps you have some commonsensical advice for our listeners who feel strongly about this and feel strongly about approaching their people, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, Independents, or whatever they happen to be. What would you suggest to them?
Well, this is a great, great question, and not specific to this issue, but any issue that people care about. And, you know, when they generally say, oh, call your congressman, it actually is a good idea to call your congressman, but there's a way to do it. And I would suggest to anybody who cares specifically about addiction that they call into their congressional office. It has to be the member of Congress who really represents your home, where you live, where you're, you know, registered to vote, where you pay taxes, that you call that member of Congress's office. And the same with the Senate. Please call your senator, call both of your senators. But ask to speak to their health care legislative assistant. Ask to speak to whoever manages health care. And get to know that person. Get to know that person so that you can call them weekly, biweekly, you know, every other week, monthly, whatever you feel is important. See if you can get their email. You don't want to become white noise and pester them or bother them, because you want your communications to be received, not you know, glanced over as just more noise. So you want to open those channels of communications really with somebody in the congressional office or the senatorial office who really is managing the issue. So I would suggest that you find out who that person is, get to know them, build a relationship with them, and then sort of coach them through the issues. But do it in a very patient, kind way. You know, members of Congress, their staffs and senators are just like us, regular people. They will react the same way we react. If you communicate with them openly and honestly, with some understanding of what they're going through and what they're faced with, they'll hear you. And you might be able to be effective. If you call up a member's office and just scream and yell and rant and rave, you know, you're going to be lumped in with all of the other people who are calling in and screaming and yelling and ranting and raving about thousands of other issues.
So that's why they're calling me back.
You know, it's important to build that relationship and to continue to build it and to strengthen it. So your voice does matter. And the more often they hear about the problem, the more often, you know, the more likely they will be to respond or to pay attention to the issue. Or even when the issue just comes up in the congressional setting, they'll have some sort of background or general knowledge about what their constituents are going through and what their constituents are facing.
Right. So We're joined today, as a reminder, by former Congresswoman Mary Bono Mack. Mary, do you think that we've kind of missed the target on the quote-unquote war on drugs?
Oh, that's such a huge question, and I don't know that I need to answer it. you know, there's thinking on all sides of that. People are going to say, well, we've spent so much money trying to stop the flow of illicit drugs coming out of Latin America or you know, Afghanistan, that we're really wasting money on that regard, and that instead of fighting the war on drugs, we should be trying to keep people from getting addicted in the U.S. And I think that I think there's a little bit of truth to that, but when you really look at the war on drugs in Latin America, when you recognize the destabilizing force that it has become for every single Latin America, you know, Latin American country, you have to recognize that if we didn't have this, if we let the cartels go unchecked, or if we really believed we can, you know, legalize and tax these drugs, that we would be saving lives. You know, it's just kind of a fool's errand to be thinking that way. I'm one of these people who does not believe in that legalizing marijuana is a good thing.
I agree.
You can't have been around people in recovery and addiction for, you know, as long as I've been around, and hear a single person say, oh, this is a great idea. Let's legalize marijuana and let everybody have some of it. It's an argument that doesn't happen in the world of people who are really fighting this stuff daily. So the war on drugs, look, I don't want to get into that. But I do know that any time we're talking about drug abuse and the prevention of drugs, we need to also talk about prescription drug abuse in the same conversations that we're talking about heroin and cocaine, methamphetamine, I mean, you name it. You also have to make sure you include prescription drugs as a part of the problem now.
Well, and I think that these drug cartels are basically licking their chops over the fact that so many people are becoming addicted to prescription-grade opiates, and when those cupboards are empty or when they can no longer afford the high prices of them, they are turning to heroin, as we both know all too well.
Right, yeah.
So you mentioned...
I agree with you.
Yeah, you mentioned... you know, in one of your writings, actually, even in my in the foreword for my book, that the FDA took more than 3 years to address extended release or long acting painkillers. Do you think the FDA is culpable here, or what do you believe is wrong or right with the FDA? We're puzzled over here.
Oh, I absolutely believe the FDA is culpable, and I was certain to let them know as often as I could. I think, you know, part of the pressure that we were able to put on them resulted in some of their recent actions. But they're, of course, they're part of it. Look, this became a very quick, acute problem in America, where we're losing 20,000 to 30,000 people a year to drug overdose deaths. And the FDA sat silently or was willing to study it or look 6 years down the road and wait for answers and do their peer-reviewed studies and the things that they probably should have to do, but not when you're losing the kind of numbers we're losing now. If you thought in America, if we were losing, say, 5,000 people a year on airplanes, there would be so much outrage that the, you know, Secretary of Transportation wasn't studying what we're doing wrong with airplanes, and there would be a real sharp, swift focus on the problem, but not so with drugs. And I think the FDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse, I think all of these folks need to, you know, I personally, if I were the president, I'd probably replace them all.
Right. Well, I think it's an organization that is broken, and I think you throw the baby, the bathwater, and everything out when it comes to the FDA personally. Let's talk a little bit about some of these drugs that are coming out and the fact that I think that when they come in front of the FDA, they'll say, oh, this has helped three people, but we don't really look at the long-term effects of some of these drugs. So I think that we're really now seeing the consequences of this when we start to see all of our children becoming addicted off of something they got for a broken arm.
Right, right. And, you know, there are terrific medical doctors now who are weighing in on this. And, you know, they're also saying to the FDA, look, your decision to just flood the market and the pain community with opioids, you might be preventing good drugs from coming to the market that might be a better, better way to treat long-term pain. Look, I'm not a medical doctor, and I don't want to profess to be, but I understand the free market, and I understand market forces, and I understand, you know, the strength of something like profit. But if the FDA were to put some pressure on just the medical community saying, for long-term chronic pain, we're just going to continue to give you opioids, you know, it's just sort of a short answer to a long-term problem, and we're not doing a service for the patients either. You know, as you know, Bradley, long-term, I mean, these prescription-grade heroin drugs like Opana and OxyContin were for people who were terminal with pain and terminal with cancer, where addiction was the least of your worries. You needed to, you know, treat the pain and not worry about the addictive qualities. But it really quickly made it into mainstream America, where it wasn't a terminal issue, but it was a broken arm, it was wisdom teeth, it was menstrual cramps, it was migraine headaches, and addiction was a problem. And you know, it so this notion that opioids are the final answer is just really, really short-sighted.
So on that note, as far as representing what products will do and the marketing and the training of what some of these drugs will do, do you think Big Pharma is culpable?
Well, you know, I hesitate to say yes in this regard. I believe Purdue Pharma was culpable, absolutely. But I also know that drugs do exist for a very good reason. And I think it is important to treat people with pain. So, you know, the pressure should be the people who regulate drugs. Look, if you know, if you were a libertarian free market person, a la, you know, Ron Paul or Rand Paul or somebody who believed in absolutely no restrictions on drugs, that might be one thing. Nobody really believes that. But the FDA does exist. The DEA do exist to keep these drugs out of the hands of people. That is currently their task. That is currently what they're supposed to be doing by law, by the very reason that they exist, and they are failing at it. And nobody can deny that. So when you look at the statistics screaming upward off the chart on these deaths, on the children that we're losing to this, on the teenagers and the young, you know, 20-somethings, these agencies are failing. And well, there's no disputing that.
There is no disputing that. You know, one of the things that we talked about just briefly earlier was extended-release opioids. And the need for some of these tamper resistance. I was recently or last year at a hearing for a drug that was coming out, Zohydro, and their makers basically said the tamper resistance that they had put in place was childproof caps. And Dr. Throckmorton, who's on the FDA panel, later kind of poo-pooed the thought of tamper resistance in drugs like what they've done since to Oxy and Opana by making it so you can't crush it or you know, dissolve it so that you can shoot it or smoke it, that it gums up. And that has really knocked their sales way down because people aren't abusing it as much. But Dr. Throckmorton came on and said it's not a quote-unquote cure-all.
Right.
And to me, nothing's a cure-all. Seat belts in a car aren't a cure-all, but they sure helped save a lot of lives. People still died in cars.
Well, and look, we've done more with pseudoephedrine than anything else because of the huge meth epidemic. We moved, you know, pseudoephedrine behind the counter. We put it in blister packs. We've done so much with pseudoephedrine, Sudafed, but we've been so much slower to react with these things. And I just know that there are answers out there. And I also am optimistic that we're going to get those answers. My frustration is every day that ticks on, we lose too many people.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we do have some great champions on this topic, and I think we're getting more and more. But I would just implore your listeners to please get involved, make your voices heard. Please do it in the way that I suggested, that it's in a kind, loving, open way. But ask for help and action, and explain
right.
The pain and explain the problem. And I'm optimistic we're going to get somewhere. I wish we could fix it today. But nonetheless, our work will continue. And, it, you know, and I also know that the joy of it is that I've met a lot of wonderful people, including you, Bradley, people who've put so much of their time and effort into helping other people and saving other people. So it's a painful process, but it's also a great one in the end because it's a lot of great people caring a lot about helping others, and I've enjoyed being a part of it.
Well, and you've been a wonderful part of it, and again, a strong voice. Speaking of reform, and that's really, I think, your wheelhouse. You've got probably, you're more in touch with a lot of the reform that's going on out there or the proposed reform. Is there anything that you think, or the top two that you think would really help curtail this kind of drug abuse? Is there something that we're missing and really should be moved to the top of the stack as far as a reform?
Well, excellent question. Rather than reform, I would just suggest pressure. Pressure on the FDA to ask for better oversight. But I would say this, the DEA has done a good job of shifting their focus to the prescription drug abuse epidemic. You know, we have seen some bad doctors go to jail. We certainly don't want to, make good doctors afraid of treating their patients. But I know that we can do both. So rather than reform, I would just suggest that we continue to ask the DEA to do what they can. I would suggest that the courts take a very serious look at doctors who are pill mill doctors, or doctors who have been negligent, and worse than that, doctors who have been greedy and profited off of selling pills, getting pills out there. I would say that the medical boards in every state ought to make sure that people keep the pressure up there, that when we know there is truly a bad doctor, and I mean a really bad doctor, we need to continue to support the efforts to go after those doctors.
Right. And you talk about FDA pressure, and one of the things that surprised me when I started getting involved in this is, for instance, the FDA voted 19-10 to reschedule hydrocodone to a Schedule 2 months ago, and now they're dealing with it. Or the day that I was there for the Zohydro hearing, it was just slaughtered in a vote down not to approve it. But it still sits there waiting for the final no, even though the FDA panel voted against it. So does the FDA not have to follow their own votes? And if so, do you have any idea what the voting is even for?
I can't speak to the internal FDA process. I don't know.
Yeah, it surprises me because, you know, when you look at these votes or when you're even present, which I was for Zohydro, it was shocking to me that wasn't the end of it. When it was voted down, I believe 11-2 with one abstain to approve that drug, and it's still sitting there and they're still kind of evaluating whether they should approve it or not because they don't have to follow. And I think that would surprise a lot of people because we think of a vote as, you know, a vote, you know, that yes or no, and when you lose, you lose. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. You know, we talked earlier about outrage, and one of the biggest examples of outrage to me was the horrific events at Sandy Hook Elementary when so many people were gunned down by a madman, for lack of a better term, or probably a very accurate term. And this national outrage over 20 lives that were lost on that day, when close to 100 people a day are dying of prescription drug abuse, and there doesn't seem to be any outrage or any, you know, like you said earlier with the six dolphins or what. It just seems like something is missed, that there are no faces with these. Sandy Hook was horrible, and everybody rallied, and let's change the laws, and sudden action and all that is, I think that's what's happening with prescription drugs, but I just don't see the action side of it.
Well, that's why we have to keep our voices, you know, keep up the pressure and keep our voices out there. And I think it's important that we do that. And, it is sad. There's no doubt about it. But, I know that even post-Congress for me, I'm continuing to be very, very busy on this issue. And I think I'm busier now, actually, than I was before. So I'll stay on it.
Tell us what you're doing. I know that you're a board member of an organization and other things like that. What kind of things are you currently doing?
I am a board member for CADCA, which is Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America. It's a non-paying position that I took right after I lost my election. I knew I wanted to stay involved in this issue, and Director Krulikowski called over to CADCA and said, you guys should put her on the board. She'd be a great asset. So they did. But I'm also participating with the Faces and Voices of Recovery dinner they're having next week here in Washington, D.C., so I'm trying to be helpful with that. I'm attending the Association of Recovery Schools Conference in Del Mar, California, July 11th and 12th. I know Stacey Mathewson is a huge supporter of this effort, and she's asked me to participate and to be a part of that. So I'm working with the Mathewson Foundation and the Association of Recovery Schools doing that, and also working with Karen Foundation, which is a large treatment center on the East Coast, very large. What I like about Karen, that's C-A-R-O-N, is that they devote a huge part of their their efforts to scholarship, to people who actually need financial help to get into treatment. And I just think that is really terrific. So I'm working with all of these folks and others and staying involved.
And being a guest on Afflicted by Addiction. And we can't thank you enough. Our listeners are really looking forward to hearing your voice again. And we know that your voice is out there. And I wonder, with all that you just listed, what do you do in your spare time?
I've been playing golf again, so I've been enjoying that, playing golf.
Well, good. I know that we're coming up on a break, and I know that you're coming up on a meeting, but I want to just, thank you for all that you do, all that you've done, and the torch that you continue to carry. Even after your life in Congress, you continue to be such a strong advocate of something that sweeps so many of our children into an early grave or into addiction and the darkness, and there are so many parents out there that need that hug, and coming off of Mother's Day and Father's Day, it's this time of year where I can hardly stand to look at my Facebook with all of the people that I know that you know and that I know that have don't get the opportunity to hug their child again. So we're blessed.
Yes. Well, it's probably in their name and in their honor that we continue to fight. So I look forward to. I'm sorry, I need to run on to my meeting with my new masters of my destiny. But I thank you for what you're doing, and I look forward to seeing you very soon.
I'd like to thank former Congresswoman Mary Bono Mack for joining me today. She's a very busy woman, as you could tell by all the things that she does. I don't know anybody that gets that much done in a day, but we are blessed to have her on our side. We're thrilled to have her on the radio show. I'd like to thank her very much for joining me on Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven. Visit me at rxdrugaddict.com. Send me an email. I respond to every one of my emails. If you think that you'd be a good guest for the show and you have something to offer there, send me an email. Let's talk. Again, I'm Bradley DeHaven. You're listening to Afflicted by Addiction. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Please join Bradley DeHaven for another Afflicted by Addiction program on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll be back next Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time. We'll talk more then.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.